I don't even know how I have 40 followers on Twitter, to be honest with you.
We're talking sports.
I got two.
Oh, you have two now.
With a couple of guys you've never even heard of.
I don't really understand it. It's crazy.
It's Moving the Goalposts. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and tell a friend. Moving the Goalposts wherever you listen.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Moving the Goalposts. I'm your host, Nick Marr, alongside co-host Mike Masala. Mike, how are you now?
Doing well, brother. How are you?
Not so bad. We're also joined by producer extraordinaire Andrew Meehan. Meehan, what's up?
Tired.
I was going to say producer extraordinaire, not necessarily mean engineer extraordinaire.
Yeah. When you're plugging things into the wrong port. It gets hard.
Boys, we got a lot to discuss with really just two sports, and it's going to be the winter sports, ironically, as we're getting closer and closer to the first day of summer. But one team brought us to about basically the middle of June, and that was the Celtics going all the way to game six of the NBA Finals, losing 4-2 to the Golden State Warriors. Golden State now has, was it four championships in the last 8 years? So, you know, obviously modern dynasty going into the series and still the quote unquote king on top of the mountain. Mike, it has been maybe 3 weeks or so. I think it was not even the conference final last time we had a chance to record. So we didn't really get your take on what you thought was going to happen going into the finals. But afterwards, with them lasting six games and the way things played out, would you say that this Celtics season was a success or a disappointment?
I think you can't help but say it's a success. Anytime you get to the finals, it's hard to call it a disappointing season. I think going into this series, I kind of believed that it was the Warriors' experience that was going to help them outlast the Celtics, and it kind of did seem that way. It was the same issues the whole series for the Celtics. The turnovers were a big problem. It was the not finishing, the mental mistakes, the complaining to the refs, which everybody, all teams do, but the Celtics seem to do it more often and more noticeably. It was just things that were certainly fixable. So I think it's not a disappointment that they made it there and lost. I think the way that they lost was disappointing. But overall, I can't be too upset at the season. Again, this is still a young team growing, with the exception of like Al Horford and Marcus Smart, who's in his late 20s now. This is a team that should still be ascending. They have obviously a lot to work on this summer. But I think you have to be kind of happy with how the season went overall.
Meehan, are you satisfied with the season as a whole or disappointed with the result?
Oh, satisfied. I mean, how could you not be? I mean, if you told me that the Celtics were going to make this huge turnaround, and if you told me in December that they were going to make practically a 360 on their entire season and end up in the finals, I would tell you you're stupid. Like, there's no way that's going to happen. But the thing for me was, and I think I said this on like the last pod or two pods ago, whatever, they have to get the monkey off their back of getting past the Eastern Conference Finals. And especially because this was the same core group of guys, your starting five and Horford, Tatum, Brown, Smart. It's four guys right there that have been in that same spot with this team for a while. They're just, you know, reunited, like, you know, Horford's back, you know, in the mix with the Celtics this going into this season. So I'm glad they got the monkey off their back with that. I mean, nobody picked the Celtics to win this. I think they could have absolutely won this series. I thought that they were at least going to extend it to seven. They haven't lost back-to-back games like that. They haven't lost three in a row since before January. That is disappointing. I don't want to call it a choke job, but losing three straight was kind of a little disappointing, just because it's the same mistakes in really all series. Not the turnovers. The turnovers, I think, were more of a thing against the Warriors. But the constant bitching and moaning and groaning, looking to, you know, just rely on these calls that just aren't going to go your way. Oh, my God. It was frustrating. You wanted to, like, punch your TV half the time.
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to when you're talking about, does the team disappoint you at the end of the season? Nobody predicted them to make it to the NBA Finals, to be within a couple of games of winning a championship. So for that, you can't really say that it's a disappointing season. It's a surprise, and it was a success. And Andrew, like you said, they took that step forward, getting past the conference finals, something that they hadn't done in three previous trips, this group together. The thing that disappoints me is whether or not we're going to allow our expectations to change over the course of a season, because obviously an 82 game season and 2.5 months worth of playoffs, a lot of stuff changes, a lot of stuff happens. Nobody really could have predicted that. Maybe I won't say nobody could have predicted Robert Williams would have gotten hurt. I would make the case nobody would have predicted Robert Williams would have made as much of an impact on this team, where him being injured would have resulted in them, you know, maybe not getting as far as they would have with a healthy Robert Williams. And I think he was fairly effective in the finals, but you could tell that knee was really bothering him. I mean, if he was able to explode and go full speed and play, you know, 35, 40 minutes a night, we might be talking about a different result. But at the same time, we might also be talking about a different result if Chris Middleton played for Milwaukee. So you have to just sort of take the chips as they fall. And I think that the Celtics took advantage of a good opportunity. I don't look at this as like the 2019 Bruins, where everybody just kind of lost in front of them and they walked into the final, but had no business being there. The Celtics team may have gotten there early, because they definitely think that they were exposed. There's a big difference between winning a conference and winning the whole thing. And they saw that with Golden State. Mike, you had talked about things that they're going to need to improve on and get better during the offseason. I want to talk about two different things. We'll talk about the second one a little bit later. But the first one is the individual things that each player needs to improve upon. I think, you know, even though Jaylen Brown was probably the best player in the series, I'll start off with him. His handle has been something that has gotten better. Now it's gotten to the point where his inability to handle the ball in traffic has caused you to miss opportunities on the offensive side, because you've got to play a game with Tatum and Smart, because you trust Smart to handle the ball, but you don't trust Brown. So Brown's got to improve his handle. Tatum's got to figure something out, man. I mean, I was hoping that he was injured, because the way that he performed towards the end of the series, really the entire series, but definitely towards the end, it was just kind of a disappointing finish for him. And the second thing that, you know, I want to talk about a little bit later is guys that you move on from, because I don't think that you bring back the exact same roster. So Mike, is there anything in particular that you think that any individual player needs to work on, or that you'd like to see them improve upon when they come back next year? And what would you like to see the team look like roster wise?
Yeah, I think handles Jaylen Brown, like you just talked about. I think that's a big question for a lot of people. You saw that throughout the whole playoff run. You saw it throughout the whole season. But that wasn't the only reason for the turnovers. There were also stupid mistakes. Tatum had the most turnovers in like the history of the playoffs. When he is at his peak of playmaking, I think he's one of the better playmakers in the league. But then you also have the stupid passes, the errant passes to trying to kick it out to Marcus Smart in the corner. It goes three rows deep. Like these were consistent issues. I think for me, for Tatum, I think his biggest thing that he needs to work on is his finishing through contact. He's I don't know if it was the injury, or this is kind of the way he's been in his career so far. It's he's struggled. Once he gets that contact, he's looking for the foul instead of just trying to put it up and in. Like that should be what you're trying to do. The and one is going to be more worth it than the two free throws, I promise. Like you're going to be fine, and a lot of times you're going to get those calls. I don't know if that's a strength thing or more of a control thing. I think that's what he needs to work on. And then I think the rest of the team, the bench issues, where you weren't getting the scoring later on in this series. Draymond Green called it after the first game. You're not going to get those secondary scoring points from Al Horford, from Marcus Smart, from Derek White, Peyton Pritchard. Like these aren't happening. And you saw that throughout the rest of the series. There were a lot of points where there were wide open shots. People were talking about Marcus Smart shooting and how many shots he was taking at points. They were all wide open shots. You just need to knock them down. So I don't fault him taking the shots. You need to hit them when they're given to you. And same thing with Horford, same thing with Grant Williams, who disappeared the second half of the series, same thing Derek White, who had gone from like a folk hero in the Eastern Conference Finals, the end of that series, the beginning of this series, to the second half not doing anything. You need You need a lot more from those guys. So I just think the Tatum and Brown things are easy. Robert Williams, rest up, heal up, do whatever you got to do to get ready for this next season. And everybody else needs to find a way to score, because that's what you saw a lot in this series. It wasn't your Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. While they were getting their points, it was the Jordan Pools, it was the Andrew Wiggins, it was all these guys randomly coming up and having these big performances. You need that if you're going to make a run like that.
So, Andrew, do you think that if they kept the roster the exact same, coming back with the same group, give or take a couple of players, maybe some role players down the bench, who knows if Daniel Tice needs to be on the scene? But do you think that this group, with if your core players are going to be, let's say it's Marcus Smart, Robert Williams, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, do you think that is enough for them to win a championship if they get better in certain avenues or in certain areas of the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll definitely be back there. I mean, how old was Jordan when he won his first? How old was LeBron? They were all 27. So I'm a firm believer in that. And I think as regards to Tatum, the lights were a little too bright, you know, for a young player. But regards to the core, I'll start with the bench first. I would be fine with moving on from Pritchard. I don't know. Do you sell high on Grant Williams? Because did you see a whole lot from him besides just yelling at the refs this entire series? I know he had some moments in, you know, the Nets series and against the Bucks and the Heat. He was just an absolute non-factor against Golden State. And just to the point where he was doing more complaining to the refs than anything else on the floor. So Derek White, I mean, the entire playoff series, I know he kind of fell off a cliff going into the Golden State series, but he did enough throughout the entire playoff series, more than I thought he was really going to do, especially with the regular season that he had when we got him at the trade deadline. So I think that's a good move by Brad. Tice, yeah, I don't think there's any spot, but with Horford and his age, you're definitely going to, and especially with Williams' health, you're going to need another big man. So there's work to do right there. But I'm not blowing up the starting five.
Well, what would you consider blowing up then? Getting rid of any of them?
Like if we were back, you know, before January, when you're like, all right, you know, would you keep Tatum and Jaylen? You know, are those the guys? Can they be the guys? Do you have to split them up? Get rid of Smart? I'm taking Jaylen and Tatum out of that factor, and I'm just.
What is that?
It two? I don't
ring
know.
Finger for?
I don't know. Not yeah. No, I'm not giving you the bird. Don't worry. So I'm taking the Jays out of that. You got to keep the Jays together.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm really. It's slightly on the table of possibly moving on from Marcus Smart. Possibly.
I would agree. I would agree. And to be honest with you, if I was going to move on from somebody before Marcus Smart on this team. Sell high on Robert Williams. Sell high on that dude. There's no way. I'm telling you, there's no way he's going to stay healthy. There's no way he's going to stay healthy. I know he does something for you that, like I said at the beginning of the recording, you have a healthy Robert Williams, you probably win the NBA championship.
But don't discount
that the reason you got to the point where you were was because another player was injured on another team. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be depending on guys who aren't super dependable, you got to find out a way to get better. And I know that Miles Turner has been this name that has been thrown around and rumored and linked with the Celtics for the last, seems like, 2 or 3 years. I don't know what his game was like last season. I certainly don't think he's as good a defender as Robert Williams is, but his offensive game has been good in the past. I think trading high on Robert Williams is the way to go. And I know it wouldn't be received very well across the league, because you'd be looking at a very similar Isaiah Thomas situation where the guy plays through an injury and then you get rid of him as damaged goods. But I don't know how much stock you can put into Robert Williams in the future.
Yeah. I mean, and especially with some of these players that they're really anybody. It does kind of scare me, though, because if you try to make a big move, I mean, listen, if the perfect opportunity is there, are you going to pass on it? No. But it scares me that a lot of these teams are out of the big three that we have, really, when it's only the big two. And listen, I love Marcus Smart, and I think he went back to the old Marcus Smart this year, except towards the end of the series, towards the end of the playoffs, there was just too many flashes of the Marcus Smart that we've had maybe for like the past year, where we're taking threes at, you know, in the last 5 minutes, and it's just not a recipe for a winning game. It just isn't. Whether, regardless if they're doubling Tatum and he's, you know, he's the only guy open, still not a guy I want taking those shots. But I feel like a lot of teams are going to be asking for who? They're going to be asking for someone like Jaylen Brown. I would not give up Jaylen Brown. I just wouldn't. I'm not splitting up the Jays right now. I'm just not. They've found a way to play their game. They found a way to play their game as a duo with those two. I think they still need a third big piece, but a lot of those teams are not going to be asking for Smart or Williams. I think they're going to be asking for either two of them.
Yeah, and I think that was a big question coming into the season, was that they had to prove that they could play with one another, that their games, the style of game that they played was going to
fit. What did they say after the Brooklyn? There was the clip of them after the Brooklyn series when they swept them, and they, you know, they listened, split them up, they said. And it's like, damn right, yeah, egg on their face. And they continued to do that up until the Golden State series.
How many years does Jaylen Brown have left on his current contract? It's like two,
it's
right?
Very good question.
So that is my concern with the Celtics losing this NBA championship is going into the series. I don't think anybody was ever thinking this is potentially a bad thing for them. You know, they're young, making it to their first finals, little, you know, green behind the ears, wet behind the ears, whatever the saying is. And no one's necessarily expecting them to win. You play against a former champion, a team that knows how to win, and you take them six games. You maybe don't play as competitive in all the six games that you played, but you know, you at least showed something, and there's room to grow. I never thought for one second, until it might have been Tony Maserati that brought it up, the comparison of this Celtics team could be the Golden State Warriors, but now that they've lost, aren't they a little bit more like the Oklahoma City Thunder with Kevin Durant and James Harden and Russell Westbrook? Because if Jaylen Brown's only got 2 years left on his contract and they don't win a championship in the next 2 years, is he really going to be looking at re-signing in Boston to play number two to Jason Tatum? Is he going to think that he's going to have a chance to win a championship if Jason Tatum's the number one player? Or is he going to want to go somewhere else where either he can be the guy or he's going to play behind a guy that is going to be the X factor?
What about Tatum, too?
Yeah, I guess it's all really what's important to them. Because I think the Celtics would be able to give him the most money. And I guess that would be part of the conversation as well. But that's a good point. Like the Thunder were an ascending team who went to the finals, who had 2.5 really good players. Obviously Harden wasn't the Harden we know now at that time, but they were in that similar situation. And you go and you lose. Does that set everything off? Does that cause the first domino to start falling in a pattern that Boston sports fans and Celtics fans specifically probably don't want to go down? I hope that's not the case. I do think they'll probably end up coming back next year with a very similar situation than they did this year. I think they have like maybe two or three guys who are pending free agents. Everybody else is back for next year. I just don't see them making any huge moves or any meaningful moves to the key lineup. You might see like somebody come in and fill the Luke Kornet role, but I don't think anybody's coming in to fill any significant minutes.
Which those roles don't even matter once you get to the playoffs. Like if there's, I was not a huge basketball fan in 2008, 2010, when they made it to the NBA finals last couple times. This was the first time that I really watched a postseason and was like, oh, I guess that the roster in the NBA is like 13, 14, 15 players, but you really only need seven. You right. really only need seven NBA players to win a championship. Everybody else could be like, would they have like four white guys at the end of the roster that were like Kornet and then Stauskas? And then
I was just rooting for Nick Stauskas points the whole playoffs. Every time he got 2 points, I was just cheering super loud.
But I think Al Horford's season, you're not going to get that again, though. You're like, you can't expect that to be replicated. So you have to expect you're going to be taking a step back there. Again, Robert Williams, if he can stay healthy, you'd like to think that you're going to be getting an improved Robert Williams and the big man position. Basically what I'm saying is that's something they're going to need to address. I think that you're decent with guard play. I think Derek White and Marcus Smart did a pretty good job of running both units, and Peyton Pritchard provided a little bit of offense off the bench for you when he was able to. You know, it wasn't depending on, you know, double digit points from Pritchard every single night. Can I take one of my starters, you know, a Williams or a Smart, and maybe turn that into a couple of bench pieces that make my roster a little bit deeper? Again, I'm thinking they're going to have to replace Al Horford's impact, even though he's probably going to be on the roster, because I think he's guaranteed like another $24 million because they made it to the finals, which good for him. Good for him. Good for Al Horford. I'm happy for him. But no, I mean, I think they're in a good position. They are probably a lot better off with Brad Stevens running the show than Danny Ainge, because I think Brad Stevens understands modern basketball a little bit better than Danny Ainge, and he's willing to take chances that Danny Ainge was not. So I feel confident with Stevens going forward. I feel confident with Udoka going forward. His first year as an NBA head coach, goes to the NBA Finals, and really has his imprints all over the entire season. You can see how much of a difference that guy made. So Celtics are in a great position, in my opinion, going forward. Great position.
Yeah, I think they're in a good spot right now. Do you see Ainge at the final game in the crowd?
I did not.
Yeah, he was there rocking Celtics gear, even though he's a member of the Utah Jazz.
Huh. Yeah, that's a conflict of interest. What do we call that?
Yeah, I would say a little bit.
I think the people of Utah would be really right. Fine with him having multiple teams that he supports, multiple partners. I'm sure they really appreciate that.
Maybe he was lobbying to get a ring if they won.
Could have been.
A team that's not in a good position in the future is the Boston Bruins. That's a team with no head coach.
Mike, you want to let Nick just roll with this one for the next 30 minutes?
Yeah, I'm just going to mute my mic for a second.
Yeah.
Team that has no head coach. Team that really doesn't have a president, or we'll say they have a president. They kind of have a general manager, even though he's not under contract. Go figure there. And an absentee owner. So who's really running the Boston Bruins? I don't know. And I don't think they know. Obviously, we're talking about all the quote unquote news that's happened with the Bruins since they were eliminated from the playoffs, deciding to bring back Don Sweeney, which, again, I don't remember if we had talked about. I think that's a bad decision. I thought it was a bad decision before they made the decision. And then deciding that they're going to move on from the coach that brought them to the playoffs each of the last 6 years, that brought them to, I won't say he brought them to a Stanley Cup final in 2019, but that guy basically did everything he could except beat the Tampa Bay Lightning, who would go on to win the Stanley Cup championship. And now you're just going to shift all the blame for your failures onto him, even though it could not have been more evident than this season how badly that 2015 draft just absolutely tanked the Bruins franchise. One of you two go.
I think the Bruins are getting off easy here with the fact that it's been a little while since all this news broke, since we were, and now we're recording. I was so hot after that first day with all this news coming out. It is inexcusable to make the decisions that they've made, for Cam Neely to sit by and have his roommate be the guy who's kept around while Bruce Cassidy gets dragged through the streets for no reason. And he's already with another team, proving once again that you made the wrong decision. Just another one of the long list of Bruins decisions where another team goes out and scoops up a guy who wasn't wanted by Boston. This is it's a serious problem. It's not going to be fixed this year. So now you're going to have yet another year of GM issues, and you're not going to fire him next year because he's just on a new contract and you just gave him some faith, some confidence in your guy. You don't have a head coach, so you don't have a direction you're going. A number of your key players are now down for a few months at least with injuries and rehab. And your big plan is to bring back David Krejci. This is the whole direction that they're going in, and it makes absolutely no sense. If you believe Fluto Shinzawa, Pasternak doesn't want to re-sign with them. If this guy's your GM, I don't know how there could be any worse looks for this team right now, unless they like completely blew it up and did nothing with it.
It's doomsday scenario. We're mm-hmm. in doomsday scenario with the Bruins right now, Andrew. You were pretty hot and bothered that Cassidy got the axe too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest reasons as to why you went as far as you did against Carolina, I think is because of the line changes that your coach made and the adjustments to the lineup that he made. I mean, come on. Like, I want to say that we're going into a rebuild, and we are. But, like, is it even going to be successful with who's running it? I mean, to me, Cassidy at least bought himself another week. And honestly, another year. That's what I think. So, and I know that there's talk about him losing the room and, you know, players not liking how he got called out. You know what? With all of that, not like getting called out, you know, not being criticized by your coach, these guys would hate Bill Belichick. And the toughness that we saw in that playoff series, getting knocked around, your teammates getting knocked around, no responses, you're just taking it. You are the softest, you are the softest freaking Bruins team I have ever seen. Oh my God, are you guys a bunch of soft, absolutely soft. If that's what you thought about your coach because you didn't like get criticized because you sucked in that series or just at any other point, and if that's why Krejci wants to come back, I'm sorry. Like, I get, like, sometimes coaches can lose the room. But if it's for that reason, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Soft. Absolute soft team.
I also think it's a horseshit reason. This one of the things that they had mentioned was, you know, maybe not integrating the younger players into the lineup well enough. Like, the younger players that you gave him were trash. They were terrible. Trent Frederick is not a top six forward. Why are you trying to force him into that role? You drafted a middle six, bottom six guy who's probably going to get more penalty minutes during the course of the year than he is points. And then you say, like, Jake DeBrusque is maybe the one hinge player that you could really look at and say he had a problem with Cassidy. Cassidy did everything in his possible power to put him in position to have success. And now they're keeping the player over the coach. Because you drafted him in the first round, or because you couldn't trade him when you wanted to trade him, so you gave him an extension. There's no direction going on over there. There is absolutely no plan whatsoever, except for let's hope and see that the crap that we have sticks, you know, against the wall. Depending on Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci to come back to be your number one and number two center would be a good idea. If you had a young center on the team that you wanted to learn how to be a professional, you know, a lot like how Mark Recchi helped out some of the younger players when he first got there, specifically Brad Marchand, to a much lesser extent, Tyler Seguin. But having veterans there like Chara used to be has been helpful for the Bruins. They've depended on this culture that has been built over the last decade plus. That culture is going to disappear, and so is all of your talent. So what do you have left? Nothing. You have nothing. Which brings me to, Mike, you had mentioned it, the teardown, the possibility of Pastrnak getting traded with McAvoy and Marchand and Grizzlick among the players that are going to be out the first couple months of the season. How much hope can we really put into the 2023 Boston Bruins? Are they going to be hiring a coach with the intention of maybe not having a whole lot of success this year, but getting ready for the following year? If that's the case, I wouldn't be super against it. I saw, and again, this is Mike, you know all about it, all these fucking writers when you got nothing else to do and you just, here's a trade idea. Here's a trade idea. But I saw a great trade idea from a guy that writes for the Devils, New Jersey Devils. It was David Pastrnak and Jake DeBrusque to New Jersey for the number two overall pick this year, New Jersey's second round and fifth round picks of this season, and then a top five protected first round pick next year. That to me is what you need to do. You need another one of those like Phil Kessel, Tyler Seguin, Dougie Hamilton trades. You got to shake things up because you're not going to be good. And the only thing that I will say, I don't want Don Sweeney making a single draft pick. So right there, you're already kind of screwing yourself over. But at the top of the draft, 2000, generational type player, like a Crosby McDavid level, you can't get it wrong. So yeah, hold on to Sweeney, I guess, for a year and see if you can get that pick, because nobody can get that pick wrong, and then get rid of him after that.
Yeah, that's my response. As you could probably see in my face while you were talking, if the trade is for picks, I don't want Sweeney making the pick. So I don't know if I want to do something like that. Right. That's my only issue, because he'll come away with the Vakanainen and for Bacchus Carlson or whatever, however you pronounce his last name.
Good one. Good one.
Like all these guys, like, you're coming away with nobodies. They're in a spot right now where there's nothing positive to really look at. And even if you're tearing things down, you do that for draft picks, and you're the guy in charge is not proficient at making those correct decisions. If you were to keep guys on the team right now, like if you were to do a teardown, who are your players that you're holding on to? Because right now I think it's three guys. If you're putting Pastrnak on that list, which seems like you are, and I have no problem with that. But then I would say three guys right now, and I think it's McAvoy, Lindholm, and Swayman.
See, I think Lindholm is just because no one would take him. Like, right. I like that Lindholm's on the team, but he's signed to an eight-year, $64 million contract. Like, he's making a lot of money now, and he's going to be a centerpiece to your team. I think really just McAvoy and Swayman, because I think McAvoy is your best player, and you won't be able to get enough for him to replace him, especially as a defenseman. And Swayman, you know, maybe he's not as good as I think he's going to be, but he's still damn good. And I'd rather have someone that is young and has a good potential and a bright future than, you know, not really knowing what to do in between the pipes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, him and Lindholm, just as a goalie duo, have built, towards the end of the season, have built something that's a pretty solid, too strong of a word for a goalie duo.
No, it's a tandem. It's a good tandem. You've got a couple of guys. I mean, Ullmark wasn't great in the playoffs in the first two games, but I think that you've...
Oh, you what can did I win say? Lindholm earlier? I'm sorry.
You Ullmark. Can win with those guys, though. You can win with them.
Yeah, Ullmark. I said Lindholm earlier.
I mean, this playoff round was very strange. At the beginning, it seemed as though every team was using multiple goalies, whether it was because they were getting hurt or performance was trash or whatever. Fast forward to the Stanley Cup final, you got Tampa Bay playing Colorado, the best goalie on the planet, who just let up a career high, 7 goals. But I'm not taking that guy out of the cage. I trust him over anybody. And then Darcy Kemper, who is an above average goalie, but nowhere near elite, and was injured for the middle rounds because he took like a stick or a puck to the eye. So the Stanley Cup playoffs, you are seeing more and more teams winning with multiple goaltenders. So I think having this Tuukka Rask or this Andre Vasilevsky or this Tim Thomas that's going to play every single minute of every single postseason game, not necessary anymore. And if that's going to mean that you can have cheaper goalies so that you can spend more money on your skaters, that's another thing that's probably going to be better off for you in the long run.
Not a lot of hope happening around this team.
No, there's not. There's not.
I mean, there's just not much to say because there's just no faith. There's no faith. You're heading into a rebuild with just nothing.
Have you guys heard any of the rumors of possible head coaches?
Just names. That's about it.
No one's out there that's going to fix it. It's not even like it was a problem that existed where the coach needed to be replaced, but there's not even like a, like Barry Trotz is probably the most accomplished coach out there. He doesn't fit what the team is looking for, I don't think. If they're going to be looking for a young coach because they can take advantage of him and basically say, nope, we want you to do this. We want you to do this. We want this player to play. We want this player to play, this player to play. Then, yeah, this team's in a lot of trouble. And I'm telling you, the fans got to make an impact. Got to figure out a way to get this Jacobs fan to sell this team. got to figure it out. If that means boycotting games or burning down the TD Garden.
Jesus Christ.
Whatever it takes.
Two very different sides of the coin there.
Well, anywho.
to not implicate us.
Nick said that, not me or Mike.
I mean, if it gets the job done, it gets the job done. What can I say?
Anywho, all right, now Mike is siding with Nick. I am not taking either of their sides, just for anybody who might be listening.
I'm just saying that the Jacobs family doesn't have a really good track. They don't have a good track record of being good owners. They never have. They've won
I don't think they have a track record.
I think 40 years of owning the team, 50 years of owning the team, one Stanley Cup championship. They'll appear every now and then, but they're not going to win it. They're not going to win it. The Bruins, people don't realize this because of how fortunate we've been with the Patriots and the Red Sox and the Celtics, if you want to count all the championships they won in like the 50s, 60s, and 70s. The Bruins are maybe the most disappointing team in the history of North American sports because they've been around since the beginning and they've won next to nothing. Like the Rangers haven't won as much as the Bruins have, and they've been around for almost as long, but the Bruins at least get close.
That was a big topic of discussion with, you know, the recent loss in the finals for the Celtics. Well, did it hurt as much as the 2019 Bruins Cup run? No, because the Bruins were expected to win that series.
Right.
Nobody was picking. I don't think a whole lot of people were picking St. Louis. Nobody were picking the Celtics. So that's why the Celtics, it doesn't hurt as much. 2019, though, on your home home court, on your home ice. Oh, sucks.
I think I've seen the Boston Bruins be eliminated by the Montreal Canadiens more times in the first round of the playoffs than they've advanced to the conference finals in my lifetime.
They're an ownership that's the same amount. They're an ownership that's okay with getting the gate at for the first round.
But finish. Go ahead.
No, it's annoying. That's all I had to say about it.
Doesn't make any sense. Anytime someone says all they care about is the gate for the postseason, you know what happens when you win championships? You play more fucking postseason games, and most of them are going to be at home. You will make more money the more you win.
But it costs more money to do that. That's the problem. They don't want to take that extra step and invest in changing coaches, changing GMs, all bringing in the top talent like that.
But in the NHL, where you've got a very, very strict hard salary cap, where you know this is how much money we can spend on players, you should be able to budget. So anything that happens after the regular season is just going to be profit for you. Like if you're relying on the playoffs to break even, then you really shouldn't be owning a professional sports team. Which is probably that's the problem, is that the owners are terrible.
Mm-hmm. How do you guys think the players feel about the, do you think the players have any thoughts on ownership? Like when you think of the Patriots, like they love, like Kraft and Wick Rospeck have got to be two of the, like the best owners. Like they're the two best owners.
They're the two fans
in the right there. Cause they're fans. But when you see like players interact with Kraft, they genuinely actually like their owner. And I'm sure it happens for Wick too. Like, what do you think the Bruins, like, obviously I think as a player, you should probably obviously be aware of who your owner is, probably have like thoughts and opinions on them. Like, I would love to know what the Bruins think of their ownership.
When was the last time you heard their ownership say anything publicly?
I don't think they know who their owner is.
It's like Pepe Sylvia. And like, I got boxes full of Pepe. I got boxes full of Jacobs. I don't know where they are, though. But got boxes of them.
I guess 3 or 4 years ago, Jeremy, the dad, sold his share to his kids. But here's the thing. He's staying on to receive like a stipend. I don't know why he has to continue to get money from his kids, but whatever. And now the Bruins aren't necessarily run by one person. Charlie Jacobs, I believe, is the alternate governor and CEO. But they have six Jacobs siblings that basically sit on a board that make their decisions. That is who decided to keep Cam Neely. That is who decided to keep Don Sweeney. That is who decided to let them fire Bruce Cassidy. Six kids that have zero experience running a hockey team. It may be the least talked about story in Boston sports.
How many times are these sibling ownership groups? How many times do we hear they're breaking up, they're fighting in the courts? Like, this happens all the time. So maybe we just need that. We need to start like blackmailing one of them from the other one. We need to start a sibling rivalry.
I can get behind that.
Like, just send like a bag of flaming poop at Charlie's doorstep from
yes,
and it just says like from Johnny Jacobs. I don't know any of the other names.
Enough to burn down the TD Garden.
Can we not with that? No, but
you're right though. The Bruins are in a tough spot and
some deep dog doo-doo.
It's going to be tough to get out of it. Do you guys have any predictions for the Stanley Cup final? Like, that's the one thing that's going on right now.
It seems like Colorado's running away with things.
Avs in four.
They're up 2-0, and they've definitely handled Tampa Bay through the first couple of games. First game did go to overtime. Tampa found a way to come back to force overtime, but then they got shit canned in game two. Don't count the Lightning out. There's like, much like the Golden State Warriors, there's something to be said about a team that's been there and done that, that they just don't panic. They were down 2-0 to the Rangers in the conference final, rattled off four straight wins. I could definitely see them doing that to Colorado, but Colorado's a really good team. They're really good.
Do we think this is going to be random from Colorado. Do we think the Blink 182 singing, they think of it like Sweet Caroline, like we think of Sweet Caroline, like they actually don't like it, but they have to do it?
No, I think I think Neil Diamond's Sweet Caroline versus Blink 182's All the Small Things. Maybe in 50 years, we'll look at it differently.
Mm-hmm.
But as of right now, the two don't even compare.
Cause like, I still watch all the videos of them singing it during the periods. And I love those videos still. Right. Like, and then you had Neil Diamond was at the Red Sox game singing this weekend live.
Fred Dutcher said people like the not many, Fred Dutcher said not many, many men, grabbing each other and dancing and singing that song anymore. Starting to die down.
Should probably retire that song.
Yeah. Blink 182 one is good. And it's better than Gloria, which is what the Blues were playing when they would win.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in bars and when that song comes on for Blink 182, like people like sing it. People, you know.
Yeah.
It gets them going. Song. Gets them going.
It's banging on the drum.
If only.
If only.
All right, gentlemen, I think that's going to do it for another episode of Moving the Goalposts. I have no idea what number we're on. I think we're on 95.
I think we're on 83.
Dion Branch, 83.
Wes Welker, 83.
A Tim Dwight, 83.
Carson Kuhlman, 83.
Oh, I was just about to say Carson Kuhlman. A Tanner. Oh, no, he's 89. Gagne. Eric Gagne, 83.
I don't think anybody's 83 right now, right? I feel like there was someone though recently that was.
What was the tight end?
Lacoste? No, Lacoste.
Lacoste was 83. No, he was 83.
Was he 83?
For like 1 year.
Aha.
Dwayne Allen, 83.
Dwayne Allen, 83.
That's all I got.
About early 2000s. Wasn't there an 83 early 2000s? That was 86 and
86 was Pat and 83. I think you're thinking, still thinking of Branch.
Yeah, probably. Episode 83 of Moving the Goalposts, I think.
Going to have to do another Dion Branch right after this. True. 84. Right. The return.
Spoilers.
No final blue.
Well, that's what I was going to say. But before we end the episode, we got to get our final blows out there. Do you guys have any takes that we didn't get to that you just got to get off your chest? Maybe something about public erections.
No, I have I went to the movies again recently though.
Oh, what'd you say?
Top Gun Maverick. No, not by myself. Top Gun Maverick. Of all the reboots I've seen probably ever in my life, but seriously, more recently, like I went to see the new Independence Day. That sucked. Stuff like that. Of all the reboots, Top Gun 2 is pretty freaking good. Top Gun Maverick, I'm sorry. highly recommend. Got to see. You have to see the first one.
I haven't even seen the first one.
You have to see the first one.
I haven't seen the first one either.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you could get away with it of all the movies where you wouldn't have to see the first one, but yeah. Yeah. It's really good.
I was going to see, but I have not gone and seen it this weekend. Like I was planning on, I was going to go see the new Jurassic World. And the reason I want to bring this up is because I saw a tweet this weekend that said, I can't believe Jurassic Park was the only dinosaur series we needed. Like that was like the big one. And I was like, that does seem right. Like we should have had more.
There was Land Before Time.
Land Before Time. You guys ever saw We're Back? That was a movie. That wasn't a series. That was a movie. But We're Back was another good one.
There was a dinosaur. There was a kids dinosaur show. That was. Like,
oh, have you guys ever seen puppets? Have you guys ever seen? Is it I think it's literally called Dinosaur. It's a
Mike,
Disney movie.
I think you're right, though. Yes, Andrew, I know what you're talking about. But Mike, I think you're right. I think Jurassic Park is really just the pinnacle of dinosaur stories.
There should have been more franchises. So what my response to that was is dinosaurs should have been the obsession that zombies became. I didn't need 1 trillion zombie movies. I could have done a few more dinosaur movies. Like that would have been cool.
But it's like now it's Jurassic World and Jurassic Park. It's at the point of like, what do you do?
But it's still under the same family of like movies, whereas right. a zombie movie could be Night of the Living Dead. It could be Shaun of the Dead. It could be that one where he's like
The Walking Dead.
Yes.
You make a show. But what would you make for a dinosaur movie? Maybe you do a show.
I don't know. I feel like there just could have been so many more ideas and everybody was like, Steven Spielberg nailed that one.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, at what point, if you really think, let's go back into history. Like, when did dinosaurs get discovered?
Oh, I have no idea.
Like the 1800s or the 1900s, I would imagine somewhere in that century, in those centuries. So let's say the 1900s. And then Jurassic Park came out in 94, 92, early 90s. Mm-hmm. So we probably only knew about dinosaurs for like 50 years before we even started making movies about them.
Right.
There's time. We've known about zombies for longer than that.
They're walking around among us all the time.
Real quick. Wasn't there a thing where they like were exploring the idea of doing a Fast and Furious and Jurassic World at this point crossover?
I thought I heard something about that, too.
I don't know if that was real or if it was just like how crazy those movies have gotten and unrealistic.
Yeah. Huh. Oh, but I would much rather watch Jurassic Park and Jurassic World more than any of the new Fast and Furious movies. Like it's well, here comes, you know, General Wobla, whatever, who was related to Dom in some stupid ass way. And we're going to go to Mars now. It's like, I'm good. I'm all set.
Episode 83 of Moving the Goalposts. As always, we want to make sure that you're following along throughout the week. You can follow me on Twitter at @NickMara94. Masala is available at @Mike_Masala. Mian, producer extraordinaire, you can follow him at @Mian_83.
Sound it out.
Mike, till next time.
Later, brother.
Peace.